Kickstart your day at 7 and get the news you need from the perspective you want. News One Now with Roland Martin, every weekday morning at 7 on TV One.
Hey folks, Roland Martin here. Welcome to part two of our special edition of News One Now. Is school choice the black choice? There's a war going on in education as to how it will be delivered to our kids. Will it be mostly traditional public schools, or will school choice, charter schools, vouchers, and others have a larger role? Now, choice supporters say traditional public schools have failed black children, that adding charters and vouchers will prevent another generation of kids from being lost. But the defenders of traditional public schools claim that charter schools and vouchers result in unregulated, substandard schools, promote resegregation, and strip cash from underfunded public school systems. So we put together a panel of 16 educators, advocates, and experts at Howard University to share their thoughts on this issue and how contentious it is. And trust me, it got a little heated in our panel. And before we get started, here's a quick recap of what went down in part one.
The traditional public school system has failed us miserably and continues to do so. If it were being successful, then there would be no such thing as a charter school today.
If you look at the data, you'll see something quite different. What you'll see is that we've lost almost as many charter schools as we've started.
I'm seeing with charter schools who are basically cherry-picking and sorting kids, the ones that they want, they take.
It's unbelievably hypocritical for folks who move away. So they've made a choice. But then low-income poor people, they somehow don't know what they're doing when they make a choice.
To me, what is still what's most basic and fundamental, George and Rudy, if traditional schools are doing their job, then there is no fear. There's a reason when you say 20 and 30 and 40,000 people are waiting. And so what I'm trying to understand is, if educators are so scared of charter schools and it's 5%, hell, focus on the 95 then. Because if there is failure there, there's a reason people are leaving. Hill Harper made this point blank. He said, if you use the restaurant model, and if you shut down the number, if you say you shut down restaurants because they had code violations, he said, if you applied that to education, it'll be a hell of a whole lot of schools that'll be shut down for violating codes. And none of us would want to eat there. But our kids are going there, and we're simply saying, hey, suck it up. There's a grand plan. It's a 5-year master plan. It's a new superintendent. This thing is going to get better. Now that kid who's in the 5th grade is now in the 10th grade. That superintendent leaves. Now it's a new leader. It's a new plan, 5-year plan. Now by the 5th year, that person's now in their 3rd year in college, or 3rd year in prison, or 3rd year unemployed. And so at some point, when do we simply say, do you, George? Do you. Charter school, knock yourself out, have fun. But over here, we gonna do what we do over here. Why is this deal? I don't want you doing what you do because you taking my money, and hell, I ain't using my money right now.
Let me respond something to Roland that you asked me earlier in terms of why did I change. One of the things that I learned as union president, when you're talking about traditional school systems, there is a bureaucracy that is like being stuck in snow and getting change done. Now, let me explain. I believe in traditional public schools. I believe that that's a necessity. What I don't believe, and I'm going to be honest, is that most times traditional public school leaders don't have a clue about how to change the public school system into a system that works. Let me tell you what. One of the most difficult things that I ran into as a union president is to try to empower the people who know what needs to be done in their classrooms, and that's the teachers. Most school districts in this country do not empower those who are working directly with the children. Those are the teachers. What they do is they empower administrators. They empower all people at the top to dictate to me as a math teacher in my classroom who sees little Johnny every day what I ought to be doing. And so while we get that fixed, because let me tell you, for public schools to change, you are never going to change until you empower teachers. One of the things that charter schools could do If public schools became open to it, is let teachers decide and develop their charter schools within your school system and run the schools, and we won't have to wait forever.
I agree.
For the public schools to change. But if you keep talking about boards of education, superintendents, and other people pointing stuff down to the teachers and say, okay, teach this, it's trial and error. When the people in the classroom needs to be empowered, even allow them to start their own schools within the school system so that the teachers who know the kids the most can really start making decisions. And until that happens, my faith in the traditional public schools to do it by themselves is not existent. So you need help.
Rhody, then Catherine. Rhody?
Yeah. So first of all, George, to your point, I feel like, I'm not going to take this personally, but I know what the hell I was doing as a superintendent, right? So I don't want you to get it twisted that somehow or another, the fact that you become an administrator or the fact that you become, because I started teaching English as well, right? So don't get it twisted that because you become an administrator, somehow you don't know what the hell you're talking about.
I'm talking about empowering teachers.
I understand. In New York City, we created out of the lowest performing schools, at the time that I was there, were 1,200 schools there. There were 200 of the worst performing schools east of the Mississippi. There were about 600 schools that were sort of at level. If you want to just say this, if you want to be able to look at this in terms of just test scores and reading and math. And then there are another 400 schools, roughly, that were the creme de la creme. Everybody wanted to do a sit-in to be able to get in that school. When I look at the distribution of that, and then I ask myself now, at the time I was there, it's $10 billion budget. I ask myself, well, now how much money and in what communities are we spending this money? What I saw was we had a distribution spending problem. You have a distribution problem. Mm-hmm. Now, if in fact you buy that as a proposition, all I would say to you is that part of the role of leaders, which I consider everybody here to be, is to get together around the redistribution of wealth, the redistribution of urban school money.
Exactly.
The reason, Roland, that you have this pie problem that you described, why can't we all get along? The reason you have it is that the way government at this point in time and the politics of schooling have kind of coalesced, they've coalesced around the question of, I get to live at your expense, or you get to live at my expense. That does not necessarily make us comrades in the pie. What I'm suggesting to you is, this is what I'm saying, I wanted to basically make sure we actually got this out on the table. Mm-hmm. What I would say to you is, we now as a learned group of people, and as parents who are not here but could be, we are at a point where the country is asking the question, are your children really worth that redistribution? They're not asking how much more it should be. Should it be 10,000, 12,000, or 15,000? They're basically saying, well, listen, as long as you fighting me and I'm fighting you, then we don't have to worry about it, because our schools and our communities are basically okay.
They're fine.
Right?
Yeah.
So all I would say to you is this, and this is why I said I wanted to basically try to push this conversation beyond who shot John. I honestly believe, and I think Fred said it earlier, there has been a subtle and maybe not so subtle intent to eviscerate public education in this country at the expense of people who essentially don't vote, won't go out to vote, have not necessarily shown up at school board meetings and so forth. When I was chancellor, I removed more school boards because I got the power to do that, and they should have been removed. I removed more superintendents. Out of the 32, I removed 16 superintendents. I removed teachers. I removed principals. I removed anybody who stood in the way of what you just described as that pie of people who could actually make those choices. Empowering teachers? Yeah, I'm all for it. But I'm not for empowering people who don't know how to teach reading.
Thank you.
I'm not for people who don't. So I got to have the money to distribute so that the people who need to learn how to teach reading, brother, hold on one second.
No, I said, go ahead. I'm gonna go to Catherine.
Yeah, okay.
I think that's next.
Okay.
Huh? I got it.
The principals like this brother right here and other people who are exemplary, right? I need a gazillion of those people to be able to run these more autonomous schools. And then you can essentially lessen the levels of supervision and control. But until you have that, you got to have some money to invest in public education and stop playing this, well, you know what, you do 5%, I'll do 90%, but the way I'm going to do my 95% is minus the money I got to give you for your 5%. That's a crazy relationship.
Elizabeth.
Choice is something I don't think I heard anyone on this stage say anything that suggests that they are anti-choice. What I think that we're all saying this, that we want quality schools, quality education for all kids, irrespective of whether they're going to charter or public. And as an educator who came through a public school system, it had nothing to do, and of course, we've seen our schools, our public schools decline. What I as an advocate, as a union leader and teacher, representing 5,000 teachers who are advocates every day. And when they fight, they don't fight for contracts. They fight for rights for students. They want quality curriculum, quality professional development, quality teachers. So, Roland, the list that you had, the do not like list, is my list too. We don't like bad teachers. We don't like bad principals. We don't like bad schools. And we don't like bad EMOs. Basically, when they're wrong,
okay.
Much like
the,
a lot
for
of the schools.
Not in the school system, what the hell is an EMO?
Education management.
Thank you very much.
Operator.
Somebody, somebody sit there going, I don't know what she's talking about, EMO.
Well,
about. I'm just going to let her keep talking.
These are the people
go
who,
right
who basically operate charter schools and sometimes mess up. But
right.
The point is this. We're all saying that we want, and someone alluded to it, Steve and several other people, we've always had choice.
Shavar?
Public education has become one of the very few spaces where we somehow have gotten to a space where the beneficiary of the public good shouldn't have choice. When it comes to healthcare, the beneficiary can choose a doctor that's provided by the state, or they can choose an alternative where there's a ton of oversight and transparency. Same with housing, same in a variety of other contexts. I don't understand why it is when it comes to education that the parents should only have the choice that the government has decided is their neighborhood school, particularly when as black folk, we don't have a track record with this government where we want to be captive to this government. And oftentimes we have the same government officials where we can barely drive in communities without being pulled over wrongfully, and maybe we don't survive that encounter. On the other hand, we then want that to be the only game in town when it comes to the education of our babies.
Hillary?
No, we've missed something somewhere. D.C. has something called out-of-bound registration. That means that any student can go to any school within D.C. And let me say this. We talk about people standing in line to get into some of the charter schools. You should see what it's like here getting into some of the higher performing public schools in Washington, D.C. So choice is here. I want to make sure we're looking at
But there are a lot of other places, Hillary, around the country where you have to go to that school that's your zip code.
Well, let me also say this, and I appreciate that point. I grew up in St. Louis, Missouri. Lord have mercy. It was an awful public school system. It was very much the way you described. And the issue of funding those schools was outrageous. As a matter of fact, the way they did is they created something called polygrids. If you lived in a poor community, you had one poor community high school, one poor community grade school, and you had to go to that school, but it's based on property taxes. Connecticut is one of the few states in the country in which they actually accumulate the dollars evenly across the board and throughout the state, one of the few places. We're pushing for a bill in Congress right now called the Students' Bill of Rights, because the challenge is when we talk about funding, and it is important we talk about funding as well, when we talk about funding, if you're in a poor community, there are fewer dollars to pay for that school. Wealthy community, plenty of dollars to pay for that school. The debate we're having right now over so-called school choice, which quite frankly is a misnomer in this particular instance. But the problem we're having right now is that they have choices that they could have if they want to, and the money needs to be there to be able to do it. We want quality public schools across the board. We want quality charter schools across the board. They have to meet the same standard.
When we come back, two opposing panelists agree on the need for social services in all the schools, but I think both of them are wrong.
Kickstart your day at 7 and get the news you need from the perspective you want. News One Now with Roland Martin, every weekday morning at 7 on TV One.
Welcome back, folks. Charles, is School Choice the Black Choice special? A student asked the question, whatever happened to that village they say it takes to raise a child?
Well, my name is Ryan Battle. I'm 12 years old. I go to the Howard University Middle School. When a student gets in trouble, like, most likely they're going to get put out of class, which automatically puts them onto the school-to-prison pipeline. And my question is, what happened to the village raising kids that look like me mentality?
Thank you, David. Thank you. That's right.
Yes, thank you. And I'm so happy to hear you. Thank you so much for that question, because it's one of the reasons why we are such powerful advocates for community schools. It represents the village. So the community model basically offers all of the components that bridges a community, empowers a community, engage parents, and provide all of those wraparound services that students need, no matter where they come from, no matter what zip code they live
in. Ramona, go ahead.
Right. Yeah. Not only do schools have a responsibility, many of our charter schools, out of that same funding, where 40% doesn't go to central administration off the top, make the decisions to have psychiatric social workers and others in their buildings to support their kids. And they have a no excuses model, and they take it upon themselves to raise up every child that comes in that door, no matter what the condition they come from. But to say that is not to say that the government should be as poor in its response to the needs of its own citizens in poverty as most of our urban governments are.
And I will say this, part of this fundamental problem is that what cities did was they cities and counties shut down community centers and provided those services, and they said, oh, just leave it to the schools, but didn't have the resources. So actually what I think, and again, I've heard Randy Weingart make that point, and I understand wraparound services. But I believe what the argument should be is, it should go back to, because this is the problem I have. Look, I got a brother and three sisters who are teachers. And what I keep hearing is, education is the fifth and the sixth thing on the list. We worried about dental care, health care, mental care. We can't even get to education. Educators, unions, advocates must push back against cities and say, reopen the community centers. So when a parent comes in, we say, no, go there for wraparound services, but in this place, is for education. And that's what I think too often we're not doing. If we allow the schoolhouse to become the community center, education will not be the priority like it should be. As a school choice supporter, I believe Dr. Elin is right. Race and class are always present. It's present in the argument around the other major components of the school choice battle, vouchers, which allows parents to spend the money the government allocates for their child's education wherever they want, whether it's a traditional public school, charter school, private, church school, you name it. Now, folks, if you thought the fight over charters was rough, wait until you see the battle over vouchers. That's next.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with your host, Roland Martin.
Welcome back to Is School Choice the Black Choice? A special on News One Now. On to school vouchers, an initiative that allows parents to take money from the government, which they allocate for child education, for their parent to use it as they see fit at a private school or even another public school. Now, a parent in the audience gets us started.
My question is this. If this educational marketplace, there's a standardization and transparency, right? And I know for certain that my public school is definitely not working for my child, right? Why can't I get some financial assistance from the state that I send my tax dollars to provide this service of education? Why can't I get some assistance from them?
Got it.
So that I can go afford to a school where my I know works for my child.
Now, if I could get a Pell Grant or a government grant to go to Howard, Spelman, or Morehouse, is that not taxpayer subsidized?
Sure
yes or
is.
No?
It is.
Yes.
It is. So if that's the case, how is it that we support vouchers on the collegiate level, but to his point, oppose it middle, elementary school, high school?
Because the objective is to maintain a government system that has failed us so that the employees can keep their jobs.
Not quite accurate.
Because if we went with the will of the people, then the money would follow the child. And just as a student selected Howard University or Morehouse, they would choose the school that is best for them. And no one in here is calling Howard or Morehouse segregated. There's a fundamental difference between a choice and segregation. Segregation at its root means that you cannot choose, that you are predetermined to attend the school, regardless of what your will, that the parents will not be done, unless, of course, they can afford to buy their way out of that neighborhood. Howard is not segregated. Howard is a choice. The same as friendship is a choice, the same as Capital Prep is a choice, the same as, yes, public schools are choices. It's a choice. And if we say over and over again that we only support good teachers and we only support quality education, then someone please explain to me why so many of our good brothers in unions have found themselves fighting for the jobs to be maintained of individuals who've been found to have committed crimes and other crimes against children. Further along that line, if we're saying that we care so much about quality, how is it possible to have a school in which 95 to 97% of children are not reading, writing at grade level, yet 95% of the teachers in that school and the administration are found to be performing at or above proficiency? See, until such time as we start having honest conversations about why we find ourselves in a situation, there's nothing at all that stops the adults in the buildings from sitting down, huddling up and saying, we want to be the best neighborhood school on earth or the best school on earth. And doing it. There's no charter school, there's no boogeyman, there's no billionaire standing outside. It's just the people in that building deciding whether or not they're gonna stay late tonight or come on Saturdays or come early in the morning. That's on them.
I asked that question about that, because it's very interesting. When I've had debates with people about this, about the issue of vouchers, people have said, Roland, taxpayer dollars should not go to private entities, but you can use taxpayer subsidies for healthcare to go to private hospitals.
The GI Bill.
Hillary, is it true or not true? I can use a taxpayer dollar, a voucher, call a Pell Grant, to go to a private institution that's not public. Yes or no?
I'm not going to give you a yes or no on that because it's true.
Well,
no, this is misunderstanding. No. So, let me say this.
No, wait.
Hillary, Let me tell you what I'm saying.
But I'm trying to understand.
You know, 90% of all public school dollars come from the state. Only 10% come from the federal government.
No, Hillary.
Now, take a look at it. Tell me my data's wrong. Is my data accurate?
Hillary.
All right.
Hillary.
Yes, sir.
This is the premise that I've heard about vouchers. I do not support.
Then let me help you with that.
The premise is I do not support taxpayer dollars going to private schools.
Oh, I disagree.
And what I'm saying is, I need to understand, why do we accept it on the collegiate level? Why do we accept it in healthcare? Why do we accept public defenders getting public dollars who work for private law firms? But then we say you can't do it for elementary school, middle, or high school. I'm just trying to understand why is that okay, but this is bad.
Let me give you some. First, you got to have some context, otherwise you're going to have a pretext.
Go ahead.
In other words, the context is think about how the money's spent. Our public schools are paid for by the taxpayers already. Public schools, 90% of the money for all of our public schools come from the state government. Property taxes overall, only 10% comes from the federal government. Look at the private colleges and universities. Where does their money come from?
I'm a graduate of Texas A&M University, a public college.
Yes, sir. One
money comes from the state of Texas.
Yes. And how much
is your
tuition?
I was able to get a federal grant voucher to go to a public state university. And what I'm trying to understand is, why do we say that's acceptable for college and not elementary, middle, and high school?
I will begin arguing first that we're thinking about public schools. Number one, they're underfunded. So we're taking money away out of the public schools that's supposed to be the foundation of that community and giving it to a few individuals.
But state colleges are underfunded.
Let me finish. If you look at how the school vouchers are utilized, they give you the premise and the understanding that somehow or another you get this school voucher and you're going to be able to go to the Sidwell Friends of the world and those kind of things. The truth of the matter is the average school voucher is about $5,400.
This is a part of the issue of school choice, because when we talk about dollars following a child, the brother just said, I should have the opportunity that if I'm a taxpayer and I put money into a system, I should be able to say, why can't I get that $6,000, $7,000, $8,000 or whatever it is, and go to this school over here? That's what he asked.
If you're special ed, see, so here's the interesting part, because it goes even further.
Stephen Rudy.
What actually is happening at the K-12, there are vouchers. there already are vouchers, special education. When a child goes from one school to the other, the money's portable. It's just that they're trying to hold on to the lion's share of it to ensure that the system is maintained. Because today, as the former superintendent will tell you, today in somebody's school system, a superintendent had to sign over that a child was going to go to a special education placement, and they're going to pay through the nose for that. And in many cases, it could be a private, could be for-profit, private, not-for-profit, but it's definitely locally not going to be a traditional school. This child may need extraordinary services that the traditional school system cannot provide. That money is going to be spent specifically in a school that is not under the jurisdiction of the school system. So it exists even within today's context. So your question requires even a more specific answer. So if it actually is already happening, and it happens at Decatur, it happens at post-secondary, it happens in public housing, and it happens in all these other places, then why can't a parent decide that if I am going to go to another school, I want to take the $11,000 that would have come to me had I gone to a charter school, a traditional school, I wanted to go to the other school that I choose.
Folks, Dr. Steve Perry was pretty clear on where he stands. He favors vouchers. But when we come back, Dr. Rudy Cruz says vouchers are not about choice, but were created to strangle public education.
Kickstart your day at 7 and get the news you need from the perspective you want. News One Now with Roland Martin, every weekday morning at 7 on TV One.
Welcome back. If vouchers can provide parents with a powerful tool for school choice, I want you to know why the former head of the New York City public school system thinks they're such a bad idea. You ran a school system. You had dollars allocated per child. Mm-hmm. Why can't that parent, if X number of dollars is allocated, what was the number when you were superintendent allocated per child? 10,500. Why can't there be a system if that parent says, I would like to send my child over here. I want to be able to get, versus you getting the $10,005, I want to be able to get that voucher and then put my kid in this parochial school or whatever school.
So let me try to answer it this way. The rules of engagement post-1954, the rules of engagement for black people were rules that essentially said, y'all can now go to another school, theoretically a better school, because the law now allows it. And we then trudged off and went to these schools as best we could. We got the best of education we possibly could. Our parents made choices based upon that. And the rules of engagement allowed for that to happen under the Supreme Court. The rules of engagement now are rules that essentially say, I want to take my money and go to another school, and I want to be able to take my quote-unquote voucher and spend it there. And he's right. This happens already in special education and so forth. That rule of engagement was made so as to, I believe, eviscerate, in the case of New York City, public education in the city of New York. That was not a rule that was intended to empower people in Brooklyn, which is where they wanted to try this. That rule was, listen, I don't want to spend any more money on the public education system. It is a de facto ruined system. Let it go die. So the strategy for strangulation was a strategy that said, well, let me just allow privatization and the market and the forces of the market to allow people to go take their money and go any place they want to go. Now, here's the outcome of that. So for parents, I live in Brooklyn now. So for parents who are in Crown Heights and they want to take their money and go to Staten Island, those of you who know New York, you tell me at what point, how many black and brown children are going to be able to go from Crown Heights in Brooklyn, New York, to Staten Island before Staten Island borough president says to the mayor, too many of y'all coming in here.
Come on, brother. But this is a hypothetical. But there's a genuine hypothetical here, as opposed to what it is. If you agree that it already is occurring to the benefit of special education children, then how can you then turn around and say that, but if we did it for traditional education children, then it would be for the evisceration?
I'm not even suggesting that you don't. No, you didn't hear me right. You didn't hear me right. Okay. I'm not saying that you don't do it. I'm saying that the predication, the basis for trying to do it initially, when vouchers first got launched, it was a way of saying...
But that never happened, though. I know you were in the meeting, but it never occurred. This is why we keep talking about the boogeyman, but it never occurred.
Well, but I'm just telling you what the ethos was.
Rudy, go ahead. I'm going to Cristobal. Go ahead.
The notion was, I do not want to equalize the playing field because I don't believe that the 95% are ever going to do anything different. The system is eternally broken, and so I'm just going to leave that alone and let it decay.
But it never happened.
Well, it happened in 1963, and I'll tell you all about it.
It wasn't in Mississippi.
I can tell you what happened in Mississippi. It did happen.
That's where the vouchers came from.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Thank
you very much. The voucher school system, as we see it now, was actually perfected in 1964 in Mississippi. As a matter of fact, right after the Civil Rights Act of 64 was passed, and we had to integrate the great central high schools, what they did was is provide school vouchers to all the students. Entrepreneurs built the academies on the other side of town that did have to adhere to the civil rights protections. They took those school vouchers, gutting the public education funding system for the white kids to go to the academies. They lost everything they fought for in the central high school.
And did the very same thing in Virginia.
Thank you.
Shut down the entire state of Virginia.
Virginia was never shut down.
The school system was.
Hold up, but 1 second.
You need to stop it.
Hold up. I recall an educator, mm-hmm. an entrepreneur in Chicago.
Right.
Who created her own school. Yeah. One of the most dynamic schools, and we talk about her and laud her. Her name was Marva Collins.
Nor very well.
So you're talking about 1964, but you've got black entrepreneurs now.
You're standing in the way of.
She did it right.
Hold up, but you got black entrepreneurs now who are literally saying, wait a minute. If I could build my own school and maximize the vouchers and teach my own kids, y'all did it, I can do it too. I'm still asking the question, what is the problem, Cristobal? Because here's where I'm confused.
You didn't cut
corners. If I'm serving 100,000 students and 30,000 leave with vouchers, that means I'm now serving 70,000. It's not that my system gets shut down, it's just that I now have the budget for 70,000 versus 100,000. That was the same thing I heard about charter schools. The complaint about in D.C., what I heard was, if you do this here, system's gonna shut down because the money's gonna leave. It's still here. They're simply serving a smaller clientele. Go ahead with your comment.
I've actually been a president of a charter school at one point, of their governing board, and what I saw was great school. We outperformed the district, wonderful. We were 5% of the state that performed above the public school option. The public school district. The issue with our infrastructure, our leadership issues were there. The system in the state wasn't set up to support those kind of systems. So the struggle for charter schools is with the entire state system as well as with the public school system. They're fighting a whole different set of battles. Ultimately, the inequities, when we're talking about the inequities playing out in both charter or public school, we have to beg the question, are we putting our efforts together to achieve fair outcomes? As long as we're not begging the question of fair outcomes and we're just looking at inputs, we're not getting there. Our fight, I love the beautiful crowd here. It's not with each other. It's with the system that we're fighting up against the state, either the federal government, that we're not talking about the issues that improve equity, in order for black and brown children to be served to achieve fair outcomes.
When we come back, what vouchers have saved the Marva Collins Academy in Chicago, and how could they help a new generation of black education entrepreneurs?
Kickstart your day at 7 and get the news you need from the perspective you want. News One Now with Roland Martin, every weekday morning at 7 on TV One.
Welcome back to part 2 of Is School Choice the Black Choice? We're talking about how vouchers give parents a choice for their kids in schools, but also how they could empower the black community. The reason I'm specifically talking about this issue of vouchers is because I know of individuals, first of all, I'll use Marva Collins as an example. Marva Collins decided that she was not going to accept government funds. When she retired, her daughter took over the school, dwindling numbers on the west side of Chicago, eventually had to close the school down. If there was a capacity for her to be able to have, if the children who she was serving, if those families had the capacity to get a voucher to go to her school, she would have had a full school. In fact, she would have had folks knocking the door down trying to get in. But I'm still trying to understand, why do we have this attitude that you're allocating dollars per student, but we're saying, oh, no, this is not for you. This is for me. You can't touch it. You can't get near it. You can't make that decision. It's all for me, when that's not the same thing in other areas where we spend taxpayer dollars.
Because that empowers black people. And when black people, we have rarely had public systems that were designed to empower black folk with control over resources. So when we talk about parent choice, whether it's in a traditional, whether it's in the public charter sector or even in the voucher context, that gives black people control over resources. The power to decide is power. When you don't have the power to choose, you have no power. And so the system is going to want to hoard that decision-making power, and is going to want to hoard the resources associated with that decision-making power, because then they can redistribute those resources to favored constituencies. But when you talk about choice, that is empowering poor black people who have never had power in this country. And so there's always going to be an uphill fight when we want to give more power, more choices, more control over resources to low-income people of color.
Troy, go ahead, Steve, and then I'm going to Troy.
Think of this for a moment. If black parents get to use the money for the schools that they choose, and black people get to start their own schools with public money for the first time since Reconstruction, then imagine the power that begins to unfold for our community. Imagine also what happens for the sense of self that we develop as a community when we no longer have to ask somebody else to educate our children and constantly ask to have us teach our topics to our children. See, what vouchers in particular do is they take those waiting lists and they make them go away. The 2,700 children that were on our waiting list in Hartford are not on our waiting list anymore. The 1,000 children that are on our waiting list in New York City are not on our waiting list anymore. Because now what I'm able to do is I'm able to say, oh, mom, you have the money? We'll just open up another site.
Go right ahead. Go ahead.
I was just principal of the number one school in the city of Chicago, number one neighborhood school. And we often compete with some of the highest profile private schools. And often, every month or so, we got a kid from the private school that got kicked out, that they couldn't quite handle. And we integrated them into our environment. And sometimes it may have been a little rambunctious or a learning difficulty, but we were able to teach them and get them to thrive. And so one of the things that I began to understand about private schools is that the private schools often want kids who can teach themselves. And when they get kids who can't teach themselves, kids who need to be taught, they kick them out and send them to the place where people are trained to do that, where people are trained to teach. They send them to the public system. And so, Roland, your question is based on an assumption. The first question was about the assumption that we don't want vouchers because we shouldn't put public money in private schools.
No. That wasn't the assumption. That is the reason critics have...
That's the reason some do it.
That's the reason a number of people have given as to why they don't support
it. I acknowledge that. That's the reason. Your question is based on the idea that that's the only reason. There are other reasons. One of the main reasons is that it's just not good public policy. If your goal is to give the critical mass of children the highest quality of education possible, and when I say highest quality, we have to think scientifically. It means where in a given year, they learn more over the course of a given year than they would in another option. If I get a kid that's 2 years ahead, and at the end of the year, he's still 2 years ahead, I didn't teach him anything. But he's 2 years ahead, and I look good. If I get a year, that's kid, that's 2 years behind. And if at the end of the year, that kid is only 1 year behind. I just taught 2 years of material in one
year. And what you're describing is exactly what Marva Collins said, how she could take a kid at the beginning of the year who could not read and was reading Shakespeare by the second semester. And what I'm saying is this here, the current system did not allow for those parents to be able to get that voucher to go to her school. As a result, her school shut down. Now those same kids on the west side of Chicago now having to go back into the public school and don't have Marva Collins Academy as an option. So what I'm saying is this here. If he said, I got 2,700 people who I can educate, and he may say, I can do 3,000. George said, I can do 5,000. Then, as kids who are not going into a system where they're saying, I'm not learning, I'm still asking, what's the problem if you're already allocating dollars per pupil? Why can't you say to the parent, if you don't believe that we are doing the job, here you go, you can find another option.
Because it is not the job of government, or what government cannot do is to look at the exception to a rule. What I just talked about, getting those 2 years in one, that's more likely to happen in the public system.
I got it, George Parker.
I want to offer an answer to your question that has nothing to do with data.
Go ahead.
When you say, why is it that the vouchers are bad? If we look at everybody on this stage, right? Some kind of way, we began to fight battles based on lack of trust. Has nothing to do with data. If the people who support charter schools, right, looked at traditional public schools and cured a fear that all public traditional educational advocates have, and that is, we are not trying to shut down traditional public schools. If all of the traditional public school advocates look at charter school folks and say, we're not trying to keep you out. We just want everything to be good. If all of the people on this stage could sit down in a room together and decide, how can we do this and include everybody? You could find ways to do vouchers that would be acceptable to public school advocates, to private schools and et cetera. You could find a way to say, let's work together also at the same time we have charters to and help Liz Davis and help other people improve what? The public schools. Too many of us have an all or nothing approach toward the pie, right? And so we don't have any trust in each other. So when you start talking vouchers, I think you're trying to shut down the traditional public schools. When you start talking charters, I think you guys, I'm afraid, because I think you guys are trying to just abandon traditional public schools. So the battles are fought because we don't have any trust. Very seldom are the battles fought on real data. Yes, there are some great public schools. Everybody who is about charter schools should be supporting, maintaining those great public schools.
Absolutely.
Not just want charters, but there are also some great charters.
Right.
Everybody who are advocates of traditional public schools.
And we agree that parents should have a choice,
right,
and that choice should be based on data. Because when you think about what drives decisions, data, in order for parents to be informed on whether or not they are choosing a quality charter or public schools, they need data.
Right.
And it needs to be truthful, honest, authentic, real. Parents need to have real data.
Right.
A lot of the data that parents need, even the ones who made the decision to send their child to a good public or charter school, is based on what information those schools provide. If it's false, spun, they make bad choices.
George, finish your point. And I got one of these questions right here. Finish your point.
Yes.
I'm going here.
Liz has a very valid point. Except my only response is this. If you don't have trust in the people who are presenting the data means nothing. So we first got to establish some trust between each other in terms of our ultimate goals.
Question.
My name is Amber Williams, and I am a graduate of a public school in the Mississippi Delta, a graduate of Tougaloo College, where I chose to attend, and now a doctoral student here at Howard University. But what I find is that in this conversation of choice, the key factor that I keep hearing is that the parents can decide. Well, if the goal is to educate all children, then what happens when a student does not have that parent to get the voucher, that parent to send them to a good school? What are we doing for those children on the traditional public school and the charter school sector?
Ramona.
I want to thank you, sister. I want to piggyback my response to you with something that I was thinking about before as well. The elephant in the room, obviously, is race and class. And the fact that schools alone cannot and should not be expected to respond to all the needs of all the children we want to serve. The city of the District of Columbia, and I have this conversation almost every time I go down to the district building, the city has a responsibility to do more for the children with the greatest need. In DC, we have a large number of children in foster care and homeless children. Many of them are in charter schools as well as in the traditional schools. And they're only there if Child and Family Services are on their job, or they have extended families who step in and help them. But we really need a much better, not safety net, but infrastructure to really support the children and the families who are impacted by poverty and by race here and everywhere else in the country.
When we come back, some final thoughts.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with your host, Roland Martin.
All right, folks, time for final thoughts from some of our Is School Choice the Black Choice panelists and me.
Well, I think it's been a great conversation. I think what we got to focus on is there's good practice and there's bad practice. There's good teaching, there's good school leadership, there's good stewardship where schools should be part of their broader communities. And we got to support that wherever we find it. We see that in the public charter sector, we support it. We see that in the traditional public schools, support it. What I believe is that the entity that ought to make those decisions in the context of an individual child about traditional public charters should be that parent, not government authorities. But I do think we need to leave this room united around supporting one another, collaborating on good practice.
Rhody.
We've had a couple, 3 decades worth of supply-side education. Most of it has been around money, around who gets it, who doesn't get it, and what portion of it do charters get versus public schools get or other public schools get. I suggest that we flip this conversation to a demand-side conversation and ask the question, what would it take for us to create schools that everybody in the Black community or in any community would demand to go to?
All right.
First, let me say that we have to get rid of the excuses. Regardless of whether it's a public school or whether it's a charter school, we have to set the same high standards. We have to pay teachers a fair day's wage for a hard day's work. We've got to make sure our children get the kind of resources they need, and we've got to stop hiding behind the excuse of teachers' unions, quite frankly.
Thank you.
Let me say this.
Say it again.
We've watched how these things work, and those who seem to be most in opposition to teachers' unions are those that simply don't want to pay their teachers a fair day's wage and give them the support they deserve to do a great job for our children. So all of that to say, same standards, same area. We want the same level of accountability. We've got to hold everyone accountable for what they do, regardless of whether you want to call it a charter school, a school voucher, or a public school.
All right. Ramona?
We know a great deal more about how to help children succeed than we do. And what I'm interested in is sharing of best practices, not having one side say, we don't need to know how that successful charter school did it. We'll be all right in 5 years or more. But share best practices, learn, collaborate, and really put into practice what we know. As African-American people, we can do a lot more for our children than we've been doing.
Catherine.
Remember that parents have the primary responsibility for making sure that their children are educated, and they should have a choice as to where they get that done.
All right, then. Final comment is this here. One of the greatest books out there is James D. Anderson's book, The Education of Blacks in the South, 1860 to 1935. And what's very interesting about that particular book, it shows that African Americans were the ones who forced states in the South to actually publicly finance education. When those schools were shut down, you know what Black folks did? Those freed slaves, they started their own schools. The reality is this here. School choice started with black folks. And so we've always had to demand better educational options. I said it during this forum, and I'm very clear. Am I supportive of school choice? Yes. I went to all public schools. Clinton Park Elementary School, Pleasantville Vanguard, William Holland Middle School, Jack Case High School, Texas A&M University. I'm very clear. I support traditional public schools, charter schools, magnet, voucher, home, online. I do not care how we educate our children. I have one simple standard. Does it work? I'm not interested in contracts. I'm not interested in drama. I'm not interested in all these fights. All I care about is whether or not black kids are going to have a future. And the bottom line is this here. If you're in the way of black kids getting education, I suggest you get the hell out of the way, because we are going to run you over and make it clear that our kids deserve a shot for the American dream. We want to thank all of you for watching Is School Choice the Black Choice here at the campus of Howard University. That's it for this special presentation of Is School Choice the Black Choice right here, News One Now on TV One. I'll see you soon. I'm Roland Martin. Holla!
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with your host, Roland Martin.